Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 184 with the title Emotional Agility in Action. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome JD Walter. JD is a learning and development expert helping organizations achieve peak performance by investing in people as humans, not just assets. When I asked JD to describe his superpower, he says his ability to reframe emotional intelligence and resilience as tools for collective empowerment. Hello, JD. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's absolutely a pleasure to be here. I look forward to our conversation today.
Yeah. You're based in the US, I believe.
Yes, I am in the Sunshine State of Florida, so I'm about as close to the Caribbean as you can get without actually being Caribbean. So Southwest Florida outside of Naples. And it is sunny and...
Is that near the Gulf of America?
Well, I still call it the Gulf of Mexico, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. The Gulf.
It's been the Gulf of Mexico since... Since I was a kid, it's going to stay that way as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had the unfortunate event that the Pope died last week or week before, wasn't it? And his funeral was on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Is that a big thing in America watching that?
I'll be honest, I don't know. I mean, it's in the news. I try and stay out of the news as much as possible. I try not to kind of fall in line with what everybody's talking about.
Fair play. I completely relate to that. There's a lot going on in the news, but probably is a good segue on to talking about the topic of today, about this resilience, emotional intelligence. What got you into this? Where did it all start?
So I think, my background, education-wise, experience, I am a former member of the U.S. Navy, and I really was more of a strategist early on. I had more of an interest in how organizations are structured, how work is organized, processes. So I was very inside organization. And I think that experience and that focus, while very beneficial for my career, at some point couldn't resolve what I was sort of dealing with in an organization. So I had a couple of instances where I was running programs, had a large group of individuals working for me, and I wasn't at the time prepared to kind of see the human dynamic clearly. I was so into I can fix this by restructuring. I can fix this by changing the process. We can reallocate work. You know, we can organize in a way. But those things at some point, they break down and they don't actually solve what is ultimately happening inside of an organization. And that is people being people, right? I had a very specific situation where I was running a large scale human resource service center at a 20 people, and it was rife with conflict. I lost about 50% of our staff in 6 months, and There was just so much conflict in HR, you know, complaints, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm looking in at this organization and I'm thinking, that's why, how do I even attempt to fix what's happening here? Because it was so much, it was so personal to so many people and the conflict was so heavy. And I brought in several external folks to say, hey, observe this and tell me what you think. And they kept coming back and saying, well, you need to fire your manager. Get rid of your, and I can't. And I couldn't resolve, like, reconcile in my head. I like just getting rid of a couple of managers doesn't change what's ultimately happening. That's too superficial. That's like, you know, that's when you fire the coach from your sports team, right? Because you're not performing well. It's not the coach that's out there on the field. It's the player. So that's who you should be looking at. And so anyway, I decided that I was not going to accept everybody else's perspective that it was a management problem. And I'm going to dig and I was going to find something more fundamental. And so what I ultimately did was I went back and I sort of reconstructed the whole project from the time we set up the contract. We bid on the work and the contract, and then we started to set it up. And I realized two things very quickly. One, that we hired a bunch of really great subject matter experts and we told them what their job was going to be. But on day one, we asked them to do something different, something not just different, but something they've never done before. So we hired all of these HR professionals who were used to performing transactions, processing work, benefits, payroll, promotions, those sorts of things. And on day one, what we asked them to do were to build standard operating procedures and processes. And they had never done that. Those things had always been given to them. So that was hurdle number one. We said, hey, come have this job and here's what you're going to do. And then on day one, we pulled the rug out from underneath them and he said, oh, but you have to do this first. So that was the beginning of the vibration. And then secondarily, we had to implement some technology, a ticketing system. None of them had ever worked in a ticketing system before. And now they were not only being burdened with having to learn a system, we were trying to design it as we go. And it was not a very good, our partners weren't. And so we weren't able to build the technology. So that was sort of hurdle too. So you take that what I realized, I was like, okay, now we've done it. We put everybody offensive. They're all afraid. If they don't do well, they're going to get fired in this job, you know, and you just extrapolate out the fear. And of course it makes sense to now that everybody's fighting and there's lots of complaints and it's because everybody's in this heightened state of awareness. And it was in this moment that I really, you know, to get to the light bulb went off and I was like, man, I have got to learn to address organizations differently. And so my wife was doing some doctoral work at the time. She was researching emotional intelligence. She was throwing a lot of stuff at me to read. I did a bunch of, you know, kind of research on my own, read a bunch of books, did a bunch of, you know, academic journals and finally came to this place where I was like, you know what, I need to completely rethink how I approach organizations. And so that was the switch where I said, okay, I'm a human agent at this point, right? Everything that I do for custom, all about the lived experience of the employees. You know, it ancillarily, you know, organizations are abstractions. They exist on paper, may have buildings, but what makes an organization is the collective of individuals that have come together to do something under that umbrella. So at this point, once I started to understand emotional intelligence, and I really started to understand the relationship between human psychology, it really just kind of changed perspective. And the experience in conflict zones, and I was interested in the idea of resistance, right? Resistance to collaboration. Why we're so easily exploitable, et cetera, et cetera. Now thinking about resilience as this ability to manage stress, overcome kind of wear and tear of, you know, tension over time. And it really started, like I said, you know, this is the key here. If we want to strengthen ourselves, if we armed to avoid being drawn into what is going on in our environment. So our environment, we want to choose, we want to be rash, we want to respond in an appropriate way. And resilience for me is really what that's all about. And so I use resilience kind of synonymous. We can talk more if you want about, you know, all those aspects.
Yeah, I'm keen to find out a bit more about the team dynamic you observed in your in the epiphany time when you did that. Because people, as you say, people blame the manager. Sometimes it's appropriate, but often I find managers haven't been trained to be managers. They're promoted from the ranks without any tools, without any success, and then suddenly expect them from being a great engineer to being a people person and a people leader is often unfair. But we can train people, and I think emotional intelligence is something that, personally, my own experience is once you become aware that it's a thing, and you start to focus on it, it becomes something you can develop skills in. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, there is example, right? I'm a great tech, made a manager. There's a development, right? Management is a very specific skill set, and we haven't trained to it. And we go, oh, well, okay, what is that, right? It's to developing managers tends to be this very superficial effort. Oh, we'll be more empathetic. Oh, be a better leader. Okay. Again, I don't know what these things are, right? As concepts. Now you can spell them out. You can put a little poster on the wall, but it doesn't tell me as an individual how to behave. How do I inform my behaviors based on that? What does empathy look like as a behavior? How does empathy show up authentically? And that connection is so, it like a superficial, but destruction image. Then if I just would have said, yeah, I don't really care about your personal life, get back, right? Like, it's almost like we can deal with that better than this sort of fake, caring. And so what I think, when I think about emotional intelligence, what I think is about this capacity to be authentic, but it requires us to be vulnerable, right? So vulnerability, and I always like to mention Patrick Lencioni. He's his five behaviors of the team. He lays vulnerability based of building results oriented team. For me, I actually resilience or emotional intelligence as the founder, because if we don't have the capacity to withstand scrutiny, tension, stress in the environment, we can't actually be vulnerable. Vulnerable is we're actually starting to be authentic. And when we're authentic, now we're building trusted relationships. Patrick says that if you don't get a chance to weigh in, you can't possibly buy in. And he's talking about productive conflict. And we all run away from conflict, but the argument is important because that's how we get to innovation, right? That's how we evolve our organization, you know, into the future. So the ability to authentically connect with people is incredibly important. And it doesn't have to be, the authenticity is more important than sort of the tenacity, let's say, in the environment. What people are keen on is they're looking for that. They're looking for engagement all the time. What is it? That's an emotional connection to this thing that I'm doing. And we have programs like, oh, hey, we have fun. That's going to rise the engagement. Engagement isn't about whether I like the organization, whether I like the people I work with. It's about, can I emotionally connect with this work that I'm doing, with the mission, you know, the thing that I do, the task that I do on a daily basis? If so, then I'm going to be too productive as possible. But what stops the noise around me, all the drama around me, all the change that's constantly happening? So if I'm constantly reacting, all of these things happening in my operating environment, I'm never actually able to get to being a peak performer. So again, it's the resilience that comes from, you know, a well-developed emotional intelligent competency that allows me to be vulnerable. And it allows me to, and what we're really talking about is I have a root of who I want to be able to draw from, you know, concept of human psychology. Real self is who do I want to be in the world? And if I have a measuring stick, then I can make decisions in the moment how to behave. So in that exchange, you have a really no, I'm distracted. There's this thing. What I want to be able to do, be able to connect with you. You're facing so I've ever faced. Maybe I can't truly be empathetic, but I can certainly be sympathetic. But what I can ultimately do is I can use space. I can say, oh, you know what? You need to take the day off. Don't worry about it. Go home. You know, if you need anything, let me know. But go take some time. Go take a walk. Do whatever, you know, whatever it is that you need to do instead of driving towards, well, that's too bad. You feel that way. You go back to work. The law in that latter scenario is tenfold. Taking a total day is, I mean, we don't work 8 hours a day anyway. So it's not like we're, you know, we overblow the loss of production because we assume that 8 hours is being worked every day, but we know that's not true.
In team dynamics, in leader team dynamics, I imagine there has to be a kind of a normalization of a balance of emotional intelligence, because if you're not careful, if you're imbalanced, one person has high emotional intelligence and one has low or not aware of it, that can create frustration on both parts. You know, someone's trying to be empathetic and listen and manage you and look after you. You're neurodiverse, or your empathy levels are low. You feel uncomfortable in that situation. So how do we kind of try and level out this imbalance sometimes?
Step away from an organization, just look at the world. And I think about all the crime on a daily basis. The world is ripe with this. That's the first thing. That doesn't matter that we're at work. Our lives are our lives, and they're filled with all of these, right? Whether it happens within the bounds of the organization or not. I've done a lot of work with public servants in the United States. If you've read the news, you know that there's a big move to the total number of federal employees in the federal government or in the government in the United States. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but unfortunately, the narrative that goes along with it is these people aren't being productive. They're not great professionals. These guys, you know, they're not really doing they're lazy. They're this, they're that. And those things couldn't be any further from the truth, but that is going to necessitate that as we step back and we protect ourselves from this criticism option, right? So I think, you know, when you have imbalance you can, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it. If I look out into the world and I see all of the drama, based this sort of at each other more. It's a shouting match. Everybody's trying to be heard. There's no more focus on bringing in evidence and proving a truth. It's there's just so much vitriol in the world, and it's exactly what you're describing. So look at it from that perspective. What I think I can commit myself to not be distracted by all of the stuff that's coming after me. I'm in a position to say, maybe not be as negatively impacted by all of the stuff. And ultimate world, a much nicer place. We'd all get along a lot better. And I think that's ultimately what we really need to be doing is we need to be acknowledging we're different, right? We're all diverse. diverse in all the different ways you can be diverse and numerous others. They all come from someplace different. We all approach life different. We have different beliefs, different opinions, different desires, but it's all okay because there isn't a right. And I think this is where the emotional intelligence, and I think the emotional intelligence in that scenario that you're talking about, okay, to be where you are. Okay. Do you want to be better? That's really the question. It's not, do you agree with me? What are you shooting for in your life? What is your goal? What is your ideal? Where are you trying to get to? Who are you trying to be as a human being? Let me help you realize that. And if we do that, I think all the rest of the stuff just kind of starts to fall into place. But it requires a strength, right? A resilience within you to be able to put yourself out and say, this is me without apology. This is who I am. You can be who you want. I take no offense to celebrate you. Be who you want to be. But let's do that in a way that we're not trying to change each other. We're not falling on a flag. Is only good if, go back to that ideal self idea. What that is all about is deciding who we want to be as individuals. How do I want to show up in the world? How do I want people to experience me? If that's the most important, and frankly, the only measuring stick that will matter to us, because everything else is an abstraction. It's everything else is some third-party creation. The ideas of success that are printed in magazines, the commercial TV, the political rhetoric, everything that goes on is driving towards, no, I have the answer and you need to follow me. And it's not about following people. It's about being authentic. And so, and that is right.
We live in a world where a lot of the communication we do these days is asynchronous. Social media, we're hiding behind keyboards, we're sending a message. That message then travels through space and time and someone will read it and then reply or not or whatever. But in human evolution, most of our communications was all synchronous. We were talking to a person, with a person. We could judge their reactions. We could judge their feelings. We could judge their state, what they were doing. Whereas now we've got no idea where the person is at the other end, what they're doing, what they're thinking of, what their emotional state is, what their happiness quotient is, whatever. And we're sending this message and they interpret it in a completely different way, often which is intended, or we don't have consequence in what we say anymore. Is that part of the problem we're getting here?
I think so. I think it's a desire to interpret what somebody is saying. And I don't know, I would probably argue that we've lost some of our command, the ability to speak clearly, concisely, to say exactly what I mean without an agenda. If I tell you, you're not here in Florida, but if the sun is shining today and it's 85 degrees. Okay, you can me. You can go look on Weather Channel or whatever app and find out if that's true or not. It's an easy piece of information for us to then have a conversation about. But if I say the weather, it's not about facts anymore. Facts get circular, proving our, that's an opinion. So what happens is we fall to opinion much more than actually just exchanging bits of data that we want to then comment on or talk about, address. So what happens instead of saying, like, you know, using my silly little weather analogy, instead of just 85 degrees, we typically use things with an adjective. My person, you do agree with me. So I have to convince you the weather's better here. It is the point of that. It doesn't change anything in the world, right? It just makes us feel better because somebody agreed with us, potentially. All of this goes back to this idea, right, of resilience, where it's like, I don't have to be right. No one has to agree. I'm perfectly okay in this world if absolutely nobody agrees with me. Now, I might want to consider my beliefs if absolutely nobody is agreeing with me, because maybe there's something that I'm missing. So I should consider that. But at the end of the day, the point isn't to be the same as or different from to have my own perspective based on my lived experience, and then to let everybody else have the same thing. So to grant that courtesy or that grace, say, listen, your lived experience, it's all on you. I'm not here because who am I to make the rules, right? I place in swan. But that comes to, right, like come back to a comfort level. Are we confident enough? Are we secure enough in ourselves? Can we, you know, positively overcome other that we have? I'm afraid of not being liked. Okay. That's the thing we need to understand, right? And is the thing that you're putting out there to try and get people to like you, is that authentic to you? Or is that kind of what you grabbed? Because I think people like people like this. So now people like people, I'll get a sports, people like people that, you know, make six figures. So I'll go get a job that makes six figures, or whatever it happens to be. I think in the world, if I sit back and I'm completely selfish observation of the world, it is, we're so concerned about not fitting in. Right? We're so afraid of not being accepted. We're so afraid of somebody not, you know, wanting to give us the job, not doing well enough in school, fill in the blanks of whatever it is, that we subordinate all of our kind of hopes and dreams for us ourselves as people. And we say, okay, well, this is what's going to sell, right? And so that's it. That's who we become. In psychology, this is called incongruence, where the ideal self and the realized self are not aligned. For me, that's what I would say happiness. Happiness is alignment between the ideal self and the realized self. If you are at least on the track to becoming that person that you want to be, showing up the way you want to show up, having people experience you the way you want to be experienced, then I think everything's okay. And all the other stuff doesn't matter quite as much. But we live in a world that is very much driven towards what somebody else thinks we should want, have, or do. And often it's motivated by their own greed to line their own pocket, sell their cars, you know, get us to give to their special cause, you know, elect them to office, whatever it happens to be. And we don't want it.
I mean, we live in this hyper-connected world now. So again, going back to our primeval days or prehistoric days, if we were isolated in our views in our small little village group, we were pretty isolated in our views. We would homogenize around the majority for safety and protection. But now we can, almost in our infinitely connected world, we can find someone who's going to agree with us somewhere. And we build these networks of people who agree. So we create our polarized affinity groups and tribes out there in online, whatever it may be. That means we don't have any sort of human bounds on the validity of these ideas or the trying to work out what tolerance is. And we become very intolerant of difference. And you're saying we become polarized. And it's too easy now to fit in an us versus you. I'm right, you're wrong. Because everybody behind me says I'm right. And And that's what's propagating this kind of conflict we have in the world now, in my belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, so to go back to that, let's go right back to the very beginning. You know, what are the defining attributes of humans, right? There's hierarchy, right? Someone has to be in charge. Someone has to be accountable for the decision. We want to live in this beautiful, idealistic, you know, dream world where we all get a say, but that's not the truth. That's not, as a species, it's never been that way. Yes, there is an opportunity to contribute. Yes, there is an opportunity to weigh in. But at the end of the day, someone has to be accountable, right? Someone has to make the final decision. So hierarchy is always going to be a part of who we are as a species. So is division of labor. We can't all be warriors, right? Some of us have to be berry pickers. But guess what? Those berries are vital to our nutrition, and we can't just eat the animals that we've killed, right? Like as an animal, we need multitude of nutrients, and they need to come from different sources. And so if we want to maintain health and wellness and be able to continue to propagating the species, that berry pickers, I think early on we understood divisions of labor much more intimately and much more rationally. Rise of mass agriculture in the Mesopotamian Valley, you know, the advent of leisure time, the rise of the arts, and now we have this like competition for what's most important, what brings the most value. And that's where we are. Now it's a competition. It's not about the thing anymore. It's just about winning. It's just about the competition. It's about being right. I think that the human species' most significant competitive advantage is our ability to collaborate. We are a social animal. Collaboration is the key to our evolution. We talk about it incessantly these days, particularly in a business environment. Oh, collaboration is the key to success. Yes, it is. If we're so lost in the end of the collaboration, we miss the value of the collaboration. Because that's not collaboration anymore. That's exploitation. No, be on my team, think my way, do what I say to do, and then this is what we're going to achieve. And isn't that great? Look, we're going to raise the trophy. Okay, hold on. I'm not interested in the trophy, right? Because it's not about why are we here together. It's not about the value of collaboration. It's about the output. And the output is ultimately, it's incredibly selfish. Someone wants it. Now, there's a mistake where we say, oh, well, that's the problem with hierarchy. No. Hierarchy isn't the problem. It's that someone has defined the outcome, and now we're all being forced to buy into that rather than saying, what do we want to accomplish together? Hey, let's get together. Now we're this group. What do we want to accomplish together? Well, I want to do this. Okay, I want to do that. All right, well, let's work on this. Let's find the common thing that we can go do together. And then the value of the collaboration is in the collaboration because of the power that it gives us as individuals to achieve something. So I wonder, I think ultimately when I think about collaboration now, I love that we talk about it so much, but I don't think we understand what it really means. I think we assume, unfortunately, that collaboration is, no, we're all on the same team. We've all agreed to be on this team, and this is what we're doing. But we don't spend the time and the energy along the way to make sure everybody is being heard, that everybody's being able to, given an opportunity to weigh in and ultimately contribute to the collaboration, which again is more important than the outcome itself.
You use the word trust a few times and authenticity, and the challenge sometimes is being able to let your guard down, isn't it? We talked about this, wanting to be right, wanting to have your own opinion, building a tribe. How can we lower our defenses sufficiently to be able to listen to another perspective? Because that's the challenge we've got to do with the emotional intelligence and resilience. We've got to have enough self-confidence in our own beliefs, or our own arguments, or our own why, to be able to entertain, finding out about someone else's why, because otherwise it will just be seen as I'm letting you attack me. So how can I create a safe space for me to engage with you that has different opinions or different views? Well, I don't feel that I'm going to be, set upon.
I wonder sometimes if we maybe hold our beliefs a little too hard, you know, too close to, you know, white knuckle in these beliefs of whatever they happen to be. So it becomes very difficult to be curious if our identity is so rooted in this one thing and I can't let it go. Oh my God, what if I'm wrong? I'm wrong. Evolution is all about change. We talk about this is like everything we talk about in business now. It's all about accommodating change because change is constant. The markets are volatile. The pace of change is increasing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's just ramping up. But it's not a new phenomenon. Change is innate in the universe. I mean, tension is natural. That's what keeps the universe together. It's what keeps our bodies together. So some tension is good. It's about the fear of changing our mind because of the perception that we think, oh, if I change my mind, someone's going to look at me and they're going to criticize me. They're going to say, hey, you know, you used to think A, now you think B. Well, there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with changing your mind. There's nothing wrong with adopting a different position. There's nothing wrong with living a life, having experiences, taking in information, being curious, engaging with other people, and coming to a new way of thinking, right? History is replete with these wonderful examples of people who started out on a very disruptive way of thinking. White supremacists, right? Let's just take this as an example. Someone who is a hardcore white supremacist. They're a member of, you know, white supremacist groups, and they are all about this. And then over time and through experience, they come to realize that there's an error in the logic of their thought, right? And they come and they meet people and they engage with people and they find that there's this wonderful energy. If they take that old way of thinking and they put it on the shelf and they say, I'm going to adopt a new way. But what happens in that instance? And that person is now ostracized from every community that they were ever a part of. And the people that they're leaving behind aren't mad because they've lost a member. They're mad and they're afraid because the individual that had the courage to step away and say, I'm going to change my mind, is now a threat. And that's the way we're perceiving it. Now we're saying, oh, I can't think this way anymore. Because I could be wrong. We're so afraid of not being the same start to finish. And it is antithetical to life, to, you know, being a human being, right? The whole universe changes on a daily basis. You know, I got a sunburn the other day. Layers of skin are peeling off my shoulder. That is me changing. My biology is fundamentally changing. There's no way to stop. So I think we're lost in this space where we're so afraid of the possibility of change, right? That we fight and resist everything. But if we didn't, we would be freed to just experience this big, beautiful, wonderful life in a just such a, I think, an open and honest way that we wouldn't be afraid because somebody looks different from us, or somebody thinks different from us, or somebody wants, I want income tax. No, so I don't want income tax. Okay. It's not, there's a conversation to be had about that topic, that thing, but that shouldn't be the defining factor of who we are as individuals. And that shouldn't create an impasse necessarily for us to not be able to get along.
That example you gave there about income tax, we need to step away from the minutiae to the overall objectives, don't we? So what do we want? We want a society that's safe, productive. I want to go about my life. I want to have this. I want to have freedom. I want to have happiness. In order to have that, I recognize I need to contribute to the running of society. Mm-hmm. I can either do that this way, or I can do it this way. One of these ways is income tax, or I can trade income tax with effort, or I can do whatever. But somehow, if I want to share resources, I've got to contribute to that pot of resources. So if we can get people to talk about the problem we're trying to solve or the reality we're trying to create, and this is just a vehicle to get us to that reality, and we have a different perspective on the best way of funding that reality, mm-hmm. then we can talk about what would be a better way of funding it. Well, we'd all love it if food was free, water was free, sunlight was free, and we didn't have to pay anything. We'd all love that. But actually, where we are today is here. Mm-hmm. So how do we solve that problem? And it's trying to take it away from the politics of the little and talk about how do we achieve our big objective. And that's what we're sometimes bad at. We get locked into the minutiae of solutions, not the challenges we're trying to fix.
Yeah, I think about, so we talk about self-awareness as a component of emotional intelligence, but there's two ideas, awareness and mindfulness, right? And I've always sort of talked about them this way, right? Awareness is the macro, right? I know what's happening in my environment. It's not necessarily head on a swivel, but I know what's going on around me. But I'm not paying immediate attention to it, right? I know I'm walking up to a corner and there's cars, there's traffic on this corner. I'm not looking at every car coming down the road, but I'm aware that there's traffic and I know that I need to stop at the corner and make sure that the road is cleared so I can cross it. Awareness is just knowing that there's traffic. Mindfulness is the moment that we stop and we say, okay, those cars are far enough away and I need three lanes, I can make it, right? I bring this up because I think that's what happens. What you're talking about is we are so lost in the weeds, you said minutia, but we are so focused in the micro, as if the micro is the thing that, you know, tips the needle to success or failure. And it isn't, right? It's the bigger stuff, but the bigger stuff are made up of all of these. But we get so wrapped around the axle about one issue. And this is politics in a nutshell, right? There are those that have taken up an issue and subordinate everything else. I like guns. I vote solely. I don't vote. I'm using this as an example. I like guns and I will only vote for somebody that is pro-gun. Okay. But what about all the other ways that they think about things? Why are we willing to say it's okay? All right. This guy is going to fight for guns, but doesn't like anybody that's not straight white male. Okay. Well, I can't get behind that. Right? I can't subordinate, you know, one to the other. These two are very, very different things. They're not related, but we've created a system where they become related because they're all in somebody's platform. And we have to distill all of our beliefs down to left or right, you know, liberal or, you know, conservative, Republican or Democrat in this country anyway. And there's no way to exist in that sphere called politics if you aren't going to live in the binary, you know, and I'm not. I'm like, I refuse to join anything. I'm not a joiner because I am confident that no matter what I join, at some point I will disagree with. And that is something that I'm not going to try and reconcile. I can't join a political party. I'm not going to follow. I struggle with people's agendas. Like you shouldn't tell me everything that you feel right up front. No, your job is to represent me. What we should be doing is we should say guns. Let's talk about guns. Okay. In a vacuum, this is guns. Here's how we think. Done. Move on. Here's what we think about income tax. But instead, it all gets lumped together. So politics is really, you know, these agendas, they're stew, and you can't weed anything out. And then of course, in this country, oh my God, the way they write legislation, it's just, I mean, these bills are just so big and there's just so much stuff in them. It's no wonder nobody can ever agree on this stuff because there's just so much in it. There's no way you can possibly agree with every little thing. So I think we've gone to this place where it's like all or nothing, right? So we talked about, like, we focus so much on these, the micro, like you were saying, we're here and we're intently focused on the minutia, but then we throw it away. We don't want to have that conversation, and it becomes about, well, are you left or right? Well, if you're right, you got to love guns and you got to hate, gay people. Well, that's stupid. That's a completely archaic way of thinking. Why can't I be economically conservative, but like socially liberal? Well, there's no place for me in the U.S. political spectrum if that's my belief. So what are my options? I either have to subordinate one of my beliefs or I just step away, which is what I've done. I just don't vote. I'm not going to be a part of it. I believe there are other ways that I can show up as a human being and advocate for the things that I believe in, right? Everybody gets a choice. Make your life choices, whatever they are. I will celebrate all of them and I will champion them. I can't do that inside of a political spectrum. So I have to step away from it. But again, this goes back to that fear. I'm comfortable not belonging. But if we're afraid of being alone, if we're afraid of being out here on the fringes and not a part of the in-group, we're never going to be honest with each other, about what we really want and who we really are and how we really want to show up. So we're constantly being manipulated and drawn into somebody else's argument. But the upside is that if we all just ignored the argument goes away, right? We don't actually have to get into the debate. And that's what we don't realize. I think often there are those that say, well, you have to have an opinion. No, I don't. I don't actually have to have an opinion on everything. I don't have to have a belief on everything. I have to have opinions and beliefs based on my lived experience and what works, what's right for me. But to do that, I have to concede that you get the same thing. So that's what liberty really is all about. And I've kind of gone down a rabbit hole here, but the very idea of liberty I find fascinating, because liberty says that I get to make all my own decisions. But the freedom to make all of those own decisions comes with an obligation to care for everybody else's liberty. And we don't remember that here in this country anymore. We've forgotten what liberty actually is. Liberty is more about constraint than it is about expression. But we don't want to talk about that anymore, because we want our liberty is all about do whatever I want, whenever I want, and you can't stop me. Well, that's reckless and dangerous, and it's rude, because you're not caring or considering anybody else's perspective. So I could go on and on about this, because I think this is fundamentally what's broken in society, is our willingness to stand on our own and our willingness to let everybody else stand.
So when you're going into organizations, when you're working in, let's call them conflict zones. I don't mean battle zones in with armies and tanks. I'm talking about conflict zones in organizations where, much like the one you described right at the beginning, how can you get people to disarm, lower the threat levels? What sort of techniques do you use?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize that what we're reacting to is probably a superficiality. It's more of a symptom. So we're not actually talking about the root of what the matter is. So go back to my example about the service center that I was running. The management, that was very much a symptom, right? Like, let's just fix this rather than go and figure out what the root is. Why are people vibrating? So what I try and do is, without any aggression, right? But creating a safe space, but allowing people to step away and helping walk back from the point of, like, we're butting heads over this right now, but what are we really struggling with? What is really causing us to adopt this particular position? Where are we as human beings in this moment? What are we afraid of? And if we talk about that, if we can acknowledge that, then we can get past it, right? Then we can say, well, if you don't do this and we don't produce, and you know, this project isn't done on time, we're all going to get fired. Oh, okay. Okay. We have a much more fundamental fear here. But are you afraid of getting fired because you're going to lose this job? Nope. It's deeper than that. This money that I make through this job funds a lifestyle. Now, there's probably a family behind me, children. There's dependence, right, on me as an individual income earner. So the fear of losing my job isn't even about losing a job. It's about losing the ability to take care of the things that I am supposed to take care of, as a father, as a husband, let's say. And that is more in tune with the ideal that I have for myself, where I am, I'm a good parent. I'm a good husband. I'm a good provider. I am dependable. People can count on me. The people that I love can 100% count on me, and I will always be there to take care of them. If that's what's going on. And so that argument about the project not being done on time often is rooted in something much more fundamental. And so I think we've got to get back to that. We have to have that conversation. Like, okay, yeah, got it. All right, how do we protect ourselves? So what we're doing right now, this project isn't even about this project because somebody else decided what this project is. But our job is to make sure that it's successful. Okay, are we really going to get fired if we're not on time on this project? Potentially, yes, but more often than not, we're probably not going to get fired. We might get a bit of a chewing, right? We might hear about it, but we're not actually going to get fired, right? And so I think we need to, that's what I try and do. I try and step us back to, where are we at? What's really going on in our heads? What are we really afraid of? What are we really rejecting? What are we really reacting to here in this moment? Because that foundational stuff, we're much more aligned on that. We all can understand that. Oh yeah, we all have responsibilities. We're all parts of families, units, friends. Like there's so much more similarity there at the foundational level. And it's much easier for us to get on board with an idea at that level, right? Like now, you know, how we fix this project, what do we need to do to get this project back on track and in budget? That stuff is tertiary at best, right? In those moments of conflict.
JT, this is fascinating. I could talk to you all day. This is really up my street as well. We share a perspective on this. So this is really interesting. How can people get hold of you if they want to find out more?
Check out my website. It's Waltrick, WALTERIC.com. There's a way to chat with me through there. Send me a note, and you know, I'd love to talk about anything and everything from a business perspective, right? Like we're really focused on the learning and development components of an organization, and our orientation is towards the human skills. So emotional intelligence, leadership, strategic thinking, team building, those kind of competencies. But we're, you know, what at the end of the day, why we do this is really about how do we help improve the lived experience of our fellow human beings. We do it through the lens of an organization, because we all show up in organizations and it's this commonality, but it's broken. It's broken across the board. There are no perfect organizations. There never will be, because perfect can't be achieved, but we can make them better. But we make them better by recognizing our own humanity and allowing others' humanity to show up in those environments as well, and stop subordinating our humanness to this abstraction called, you know, Company X. Yeah.
Amazing. JT, thank you so much.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.